Up first, let's talk about Western University. Is the Amit Chakma double-dip scandal over, or does it still have legs? The report from retired Justice Stephen T. Gouge was released yesterday. It found that while it may have made sense to compensate administrators who take time off to enhance their schools, it should not be paid out if leave isn't taken or during a current presidential term. The chair of Western's Board of Governors, Chirag Shah, says the board has accepted all the report's recommendations, which aim to avoid a repeat of this year's situation. Those recommendations include better internal communication and consultation with the university community and limiting the circumstances under which administrative leave might be taken as salary. The report itself was also costly. It cost anywhere between $70,000 and $80,000. This after it was revealed this past summer that Western spent $100,000 on PR and legal advice when this all became a huge issue in the spring. Richard LeBlanc is a lawyer based in Toronto who advises boards and teachers at York and Harvard universities. We talked to him about this back in July. He joins us again today to discuss this. Thanks for your time today.
My pleasure, Devin.
Well, there are positives and negatives, I guess, Western University could draw from the Gouge report. It found the double-dip payment was a mistake, but also described it as an innocent mistake. What did you make of the report?
I don't think the justice used the word innocent mistake unless I misread the report. I think it was a little stronger than that. A couple of things is the monetization of the administrative leave was not a common practice. In fact, most universities have not done that. He cited one other university, which was Waterloo, where the president was formerly at. He thought it was rare. The chair of the board agreed to this and amended the contract. There was no disclosure to the pay committee, which was the name of the pay committee is the Senior Operations Committee, and the judge found fault of that lack of transparency. The judge also found fault that the members of the board were not notified of this monetization. He made a number of what I think are very good recommendations, namely consultation with the council of the university for any contractual amendments. Complete transparency. In other words, the committee that negotiated the contract should have been not only given notice, but signed off on it, which did not occur. And the board of directors should have been given notice of the monetization. So it's a pretty, when you look at pay scandals, frequently you find one person approving pay, and that's exactly what happened here. So the result is that the chair of the board now has reputational issues as a result of what transpired. It's highly anomalous for one person to be approving a CEO's pay package or an amendment there too, in terms of governance standards. So there's a lot of food for thought here in the judge's report.
Indeed, yeah. To be clear, the innocent mistake remark might have been in a subsequent interview he gave with the London Free Press. Everything kind of jumbles together when I've been reading the report and whatnot. In terms of Chirag Shah, though, he's had his fair share of criticism. Do you think that's going to ramp up? Now, certainly, like Amit Chakma has been the public face of this, but Chirag Shah, I think, is going to start to feel maybe more of some of the criticism from all of this.
Yeah, he should be. The two of them, really, proper governance at this point is for the president and the chair to be instructed by the independent directors of the board to leave the room and not exert any influence on any decision that the board makes. So the board has to make a decision now. The credibility of both the chair of the board and the president of the university have been undermined by this report. You have a judge using very harsh language, an arrangement that was rare, and a lack of transparency in terms of no other directors signing off on this rare monetization. My advice to the board, and this is advice I regularly give when it comes to ethical breaches, is to remove the wrongdoers out of the room and to have a very candid and confidential discussion about tone at the top and what the board is prepared to do or accept. A good board should have a succession plan for an interim chair, and they certainly should discuss the possibility of appointing, this should not be ruled out, an interim president of the university. If the view collectively of the independent directors of the board is, you know, this can't continue. We have to fire the CEO, fire the president. That's the most important thing the board does, is hire, fire, and pay the president. And in this respect, it tripped up significantly. You know, this has reputational effects throughout Canada. It affects donations. It affects perceptions. It affects legitimacy, accountability, and proper governance.
To that point, you know, when we talked back in July, part of our discussion was about, you know, the nature of university governance, which I wonder how far this report might go in terms of that, whether it'll lead to some more changes for the board or at Western or not. And I don't know if there's the desire or the appetite to go that far. Maybe it may not be their choice, but I wonder how far we might see any sort of governance change from all of this.
Yeah, I mean, that's the wider policy implication. I'm hoping that, as I think I said to you back in July, that without governmental regulation, this is just not going to change. You've got, I think I counted over 30 directors on this board. This is really not a board. We don't know who's independent, who's not independent. We don't even know if the chair is independent, for example. It's too large. We now have scandals at University of British Columbia. This is a presidential situation as well. Dalhousie University, we had an issue in Saskatchewan. We now have Western Ontario. You know, universities are bureaucratic. There's lots of moving parts. You know, even something as basic as this pay committee deciding, and I think the judge made reference to that, the committee should never decide. The committee always reviews and recommends, and the board decides. The problem is you've got a 30-person board at this university, so it's far too large. So I think there needs to be a rethinking of university governance. You know, you've got crushing student debt. You've got administrative overhead. For the most part, you don't have a whole lot of disclosure. You don't have pay for performance for faculty, for administrative personnel. Very high overhead. You don't have disclosure of comparables like you did in hospitals, for example. I think McGuinty, about 10 years ago, revised the governance of hospitals for the better. It was a 10-page law change, and it just has really focused governance and accountability of hospitals. You have examples of misappropriation of resources. You know, in a couple of instances, you've had fraud. You've got pay scandals where you're attempting to sort of circumvent public sector guidelines. And all this is tone at the top. It's all governance. So you can't have a 30-person board. Those days should be numbered. So it's a teachable moment for the reform of university governance.
In an interview with one of my colleagues, Chirag Shah, said the board did accept all of the recommendations. They want to move forward now. That's open to interpretation. We'll see what they exactly do in terms of moving forward. But this may not be over the way the board would like it to be over.
This is not over unless and until decisions are made on reforming governance practices, number one, and number two is whether the chair and the president still have authority to lead the board and the university respectively. Any good board would be taking a serious look at both of those incumbents and making a decision in the best interest of the organization. I would not be surprised in the next couple of weeks if there's changes at the top in either one or both positions.
I was just going to ask what the timeline would be in terms of trying to determine whether or not they're taking this seriously and if they're going to be looking at maybe some changes.
Yeah, it's the timeline for the president, if they decide to pull the trigger, is appointing, if they're a good board, they probably should have already done this, is who can step up either internally or on the board to an interim position while we do a presidential search for 3 to 6 months, hopefully closer to 3 than 6. So there should be an interim president that has already been identified by the board, and I suspect that's probably the case because they should have predicted a negative review. This review does not get more negative. When something is rare and non-transparent, that's a strong indictment. So that's the presidential timeline. The chair timeline, I think, is easier. The chair timeline is the vice chair or another independent director can step up within a matter of days, maybe a week or two at the outset. But the board needs to meet in executive session, likely this week. It's probably already had a telephone meeting, but it needs to be the full board. It can't be a committee. It can't be select directors, and it should not have the the chair of the board should not be present. The chair has to get up and leave the room for an in-camera session. So that's likely going to happen in the next week or two, I would think.
Richard, I certainly appreciate your time today. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Devin. Call me anytime.